Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by today. This whole week, we're going to be talking about mental health. I have posted on my Facebook page some of the local meetings that are going to be taking place over the months to come. The biggest one and probably the most important one is going to be in April. But in the interim, all the meetings are going to be gathering people who are like-minded, who get what's going on and understand the fact that we have to work towards some better answers. Today, when we discuss mental illness and mental health, we're going to try to correlate it to some of the tragedies that have happened in the past few years in regard to young people. Because I believe the more I study, the more I research, the more I talk to different people about what's going on in the world today, the more I realize that, of course, a sound mind, first of all, is has many variables. Has many, many variables. And just like everything that we talk about, everybody's different. There are some people out there who their minds run on this really, really high level, and they see things that the rest of us don't see. They understand things that the rest of us don't understand. Their mind has been developed. The day that we talked about the unforgettable people, the people that can recall a specific day, a time, what they were wearing, what the smells were, everything about that day, no matter how long ago it was. This is another kind of mind development. There's people that can memorize things. There's people that can do many, many, many things with their mind. And then there's some of us whose mind is like a messy room. It just never gets organized enough to be functional. And I see that in a lot of the things that I've been reading. Sometimes that unorganized mind is detrimental to the owner. Other times that unorganized mind is detrimental to the rest of the world. Through the past year, we've talked about a lot of people that it was kind of debatable over their sanity. We've talked about Hitler many times. We've talked about other people in our history that did some pretty surprisingly, sometimes mean things, sometimes great things. But there seems to be a correlation between, like, the Sandy Hook murders, the young man with the crazy red hair that walked in to the showing of The Dark Knight, I think it was, in a movie theater, and killed all those people. He goes on trial this week. That's another question I have. Why are we spending the time, energy, money, media, all the things that we're spending on a young man who's obviously needs to be put someplace where he can't harm anybody else. Something very different is going on with him. However, my son reminded me yesterday when I said that out loud, he says, Mom, it's everybody's right. And if there's one thing that we have to pay attention to, it's the rights of each one of us, and he has a right to a trial. And I said, well, that's a good point. But again, that's another one of those things that it makes me, like, want to shake my head. If you know that something is what it is, and it's pretty much unanimous, I don't know. I question the validity of doing things just for the sake of doing them. I don't know if I understand that, especially in a time when there's so much other stuff going on that does require that kind of attention, and because of what you're doing, you can't give it any attention. Anyway, I feel like I'm talking in circles today. But it appears to be, the more I research about all of this, it appears to be very convoluted. There appears to be some problem in bonifying what people call, unless it's out-and-out insanity, which on occasion is right there for the whole world to see. But if it's tricky, then they have to evaluate and figure out what's going on. And sometimes the person that has the least control over their mind is very clever and tricky. So, very, very interesting subject, and I hope that you all pay attention to what I posted on Facebook. A lot of my friends are sharing it. I encourage you all to share it so that more people are aware of what we're trying to do, because this is something we all worry about, we all complain about. If you're going to complain, you should be willing to step in and do your part to help. I'm going to bring in Shell, so we can talk about bullying versus, or bullying as in connected to mental illness. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have a scratchy throat and this little goofy cough that's kind of, I keep feeling like I have to clear my throat all the time. I think I must have way too much to say and haven't been able to say it, you know. You ever have that?
Yeah,
feeling?
I know. This is, we're having goofy weather, that's why. You know, Floridians, we're not used to going from 40 degrees to 80 degrees in a matter of 3 or 4 days. Our bodies don't acclimate, you know.
It's one thing to
be in cold weather for, you know, for several weeks, or to be in really hot weather for several weeks. But when it's going, when we're actually spanning 40 degrees in a matter of a couple of days, and it's dipping, going, getting hot, and then getting cold again, our bodies get really confused.
That is true. That is very, very true. So what are your thoughts on the correlation between all the things that we talk about bullying?
Well, I want to make a comment about one thing you said, and then we'll get into that. You were talking about the trial for the very troubled young man who, the one with the red hair is the one who shot up the school. Is that the one you were talking about?
No. The one that shot up the school killed himself.
Oh, okay. The one with the red hair. What did he do then?
He went into the movie theater. The Dark Knight.
Okay,
the first
right,
showing
okay.
of the Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the whole thing is that what confuses me with that also is that if somebody is mentally ill, I always thought that they were deemed incompetent to stand trial, that they, you know, that they couldn't provide their own defense. So I don't know if they're going for an insanity defense for this guy or whatever, but I think that you can't just deem somebody innocent by reason of insanity unless there is a jury trial. I mean, you see this all the time. You know, they have to prove that it wasn't premeditated. They have to prove that this guy isn't just a serial killer, all right? Because a serial killer, that's a mental illness into itself, but it's a cognitive mental illness. They know what they're doing is wrong, but they just get off on doing it. Where somebody else can shoot up people and they say, well, the devil told me to do it or God told me to do it, that's a different type of mental illness, because they almost feel righteous. And then you have a third type of mental illness where the person doesn't even perceive what they did is wrong. Whatever is there that creates a conscience force or that type of reasoning ability, they don't have. So they don't even recognize it, what they did. So but there's several different levels that would denote an insanity defense. If somebody's deemed as a serial killer, they're going to go to jail. They're not going to go to a mental institution, although that in itself is a mental disorder. I mean, that's not a normal way for the brain to operate, for the mind and the heart and the soul to operate. But one is considered criminal and one is considered incapacitated, where they would go to a mental institution instead of jail. So it's kind of interesting fine lines. But a lot of that has to be determined during a jury trial. You know, both sides, put out their evidence. The more premeditation and planning there is, the less it appears like, less of a mental illness, unless that planning is because they were told to do it by some unseen force or something like that. I mean, that this is some of what I've been seeing, so I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but that's a lot of what I've seen as to why there are jury trials in these type of cases.
Well, I understand that, and of course that's pretty much the same thing my son said to me. You know, he said, that's the way it's set up, Mom. You have to follow the same protocol regardless of what's going on with the person. And if the outcome deems this person, unable to participate in his own trial because he is so mentally ill, then a different route is taken. And I said, well, I get all that, and I see all that. But again, does that make sense? That's the whole thing I'm questioning. I'm questioning whether or not there's any real validity to something that is so obvious. It's like, think of something silly that you look at and you know something's wrong, and there's no quick fix to it. Do you still, there's no fix to it. Do you still try to fix it? I mean, say you have a car accident, and your car is absolutely, like, crushed, like a giant took it and wadded it up in a ball. Do you take that car to the junkyard, or do you take it to a body shop? That's where I'm, and I understand in some cases it's not so cut and dried. I get that, and I believe in that, and I'm all for doing what's right and fair to everybody. But still, when we're talking about being able to...
Lesser charges. There's a lot going on behind the scenes than you may think. It's not just that the prosecutor's office is going after these people. They're going to go after them.
I lost you, Shelley. I don't know what she was going to say. I get that there is some, that there's some red tape and there's some bureaucracy involved. Yeah, I'm here now. Yeah, but we lost you totally.
Well, what I was saying is that to understand that the defense attorneys are really the ones who would keep it going, because if they know their client is caught red-handed and they don't take some kind of if they don't make a guilty plea, and or plea bargain to a lesser charge or something like that, then the DA's office, the district attorney.
Shall we keep losing you? I don't know what the deal is this morning. We've been doing real good with the phones, so something must be going on out there. Anyway, I understand all that. I do. I understand, but it still seems to me that, and I get that things are not just... honey, we didn't hear any of that. We didn't hear any of that.
Huh.
Why don't you hang up and call in again and see if that makes a difference? I think that the point Shell's trying to make is a valid one, and I understand that there has to be the same laws for everybody, and there has to be procedural follow-throughs. But I do wonder, if it has to be so long and drawn out and cost so much money. Every time somebody comes to me and complains about something not working, one of the other parts of the story, okay, I've got you back in. Can we hear you now?
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, let's see how long it lasts. Okay, so what? Everything that you're saying, I understand, and I understand that there are laws designed to protect everybody, and that's the whole idea. I get that. I applaud that. I believe
but
in
the,
that.
The point I was getting at, and I don't know if it was ever heard, was that this is a negotiation between the district attorney and the defense attorney, and if it goes to trial, it means that they never came to a meeting of the minds.
Well, that's because of other reasons, though, sometimes. That's what gets me.
But what I'm saying is a lot of times people think that you're like, why are we prosecuting this guy? It's because there has to be a determination as to whether or not he's going to jail or he's going to a mental institution, and that has to be decided upon after, you know, either the defense attorney agrees, yes, look, let's remand this guy, or if the district attorney feels that there was something there that the guy wasn't incapacitated and they want them to go to jail, and they can't, you know what I'm saying? So there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than a lot of times you hear in the news.
And I don't doubt that. I'm just going at face value, honey. Look at him. I'm just going at simple face value, and look at what he did. Does anything about it scream sanity to you?
Also don't know all the facts. You don't know if there were other people involved, if he was instigated to do this.
Even if he was, I know. I understand extenuating circumstances. I understand them completely. And you're right, I don't know. But I'm using this example as something that seems to me, when we complain about money and the cost of a trial and the cost of this and the cost of that in a world where there are people starving and homeless and can't get enough meds to stay in a world of sanity, I question the validity of all of this when it could be kept much simpler. I get that there's extenuating circumstances, of course. I mean, you know, the reason I woke up the way I did today has extenuating circumstances. Everything does. but it's kind of like choosing. And I don't know how you'd fix it. Believe me, I wish I did. I'm not smart enough to know how to fix it. I just question why we do some of the things we do and then cry and moan and bellyache about it later.
All right, I know. I think our judicial system, and that's a topic for another show because we can go on for hours with that, but I definitely think our judicial system is crippled today. I think it's too convoluted. I think too many judges are allowed to stay on the bench beyond their competency. And that's only a small percentage, but unfortunately that small percentage wreaks havoc on the people that end up going up in front of them. So the system is definitely not working properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings me to say that the whole show today, I wanted to show the correlation between mental illness, obvious mental illness, mental struggles, the ability to make wise decisions, the ability to follow through on decisions, the ability to hold an everyday job, function in a world that does not always embrace functionality either. So, many days you have to, what's that old saying, drop and punt or something like that when something comes up. You have to be able to think like that. There are some of us out there that
I think it's drop and roll.
Yeah, drop and roll. What's the one
drop
that says
roll.
Punt? Back up and punt or something like that? It's like starting over again. But anyway, I feel like, you know, mental illness plays a big part in all of these horrible things that are going wrong. So if you were asked, how do we stop some of the horrific crimes that are going on out there? How do we stop them? You would say what? What would be your first answer to that?
You mean how to stop violent crimes?
Yes, the kind of crimes that, like the shootings, like the young people going in and shooting up a classroom, all those kind of things, like those.
So the first thing is that, because we've seen this in almost every case that we talk about, people have to start being more responsive to the leading behavior that kind of puts up red flags. Every time you hear about one of these cases, you always hear that there were at least a half a dozen people that saw red flags and didn't respond to them. And I'm using the word respond, not react, because a lot of times if you react, it can be overboard. It can be aggressive. It can be unwarranted. It can be an overreaction. But when you respond to a situation, it means you're staying calmer, you're staying more in control, you're seeing something that's of concern to you, and you're taking appropriate actions, not just any action, okay? Because you hear that all the time, well, you have to do something. You know, no, it has to be an appropriate action. Talk to this individual, find out where their mind is. If you're getting feedback from this individual that's alarming, then that means this individual needs some help, and somebody needs to step in before this ticking time bomb blows up. Because there, and so many times you see that there's these little indicators that this person was crossing a line, and nobody did anything. They saw it, ignored it, and went on about their day. So that's probably one of the keys, is that during the time when an individual like that is brewing, so to speak, before they boiled over, people have to start responding, each and every person, and this is individual. But the only thing you can do is control the little part of the world that enters your awareness. And if people would start responding to what comes into their awareness across the board, things would start improving, you know, slowly and gradually all over the place. If just people would take more personal responsibility for what came into their, you know, their awareness.
Well, and that's, of course, sound advice. And I'd like to think that a lot of people do try to do that. But then you have the people, the mom of the young man at Sandy Hook, the one who killed her before he ever went over to the school and killed the 20 kids and the teachers and all those people, and then killed himself. Do you believe that she didn't know that something was wrong with her son? Do you believe that...
appropriate things. Didn't she go out and buy him the guns?
Well, she taught him how to use guns. And the chances are that both members of that family suffered with extreme incompetency due to their mental health. That's, right. I mean, you know, from a very long way away, because I'm not in the middle of that scenario, but from a very long way away, that's what it appears to be to me. But, I mean, she was a teacher.
I know, but
see how convoluted this gets, you know?
I know, but it
somebody
seems
had
to
see something, honey. Somebody had to see something.
It seemed to me that she was trying to placate her son by giving him things that she knew he wanted without making sure that he had the mental competency to not misuse it. Like, I mean, like, not everybody can become a police officer. If you answer questions a certain way, you know, they're going to deem you, you know, not fit for service and not put a loaded weapon in your hand, you know, and... It should go the same way for anybody that's looking to get a gun. I don't understand why people who are trying to get a gun don't have to answer similar questionnaires to what police officers have to answer, because some people that want a gun aren't using it for protection. They're using it for aggression.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the other thing that bothers me. Instead of reacting to the behavior of these two boys, or these two men, the one that went into the dark night and killed 12 people and all this kind of stuff and wounded 58 people. I mean, that was like mass. And then the young man that went to the school and killed all those children, they're more they're more honed in on passing stricter laws for guns. You're bypassing the major problem. You're bypassing the major problem. Yes, I get that we need to organize the gun laws and everything, but somebody who's not functioning in their brain the way they're supposed to really be able to, separate good from bad, right from wrong, all those kind of things, a gun was just a means. It wasn't the driving force, the gun. The gun couldn't have done anything by itself.
Right, right.
So I read these things and I think to myself, why is that the most important thing? One of the people that's talking a lot about this is one of the survivors who got shot, but he survived. And the first thing he wants to talk about is gun policy. And I'm like, the guns didn't march out of a store and just jump up in the air and shoot people. There was somebody
right.
holding it. And that seems to get you see what I'm saying?
I agree and I don't agree, because the whole thing is there's nothing that can injure and annihilate masses other than guns. I mean, you're not going to go into a place.
Yeah, but you've
got to
have somebody holding it. I get that, but you got to have somebody holding it.
But what I'm saying is that if somebody can't get a gun, they're not going to be able to take a knife and do the same amount of damage. They might hurt one person, but they'll get taken down by 30 others before they injure more, because if you have to get close to the person. A gun, you can be at a distance and injure 30 people. So I think there should be stricter gun laws, and I don't think that things like automatic weapons and things like that should be so easy to get out on the street. It's mind-boggling to me that those type of weapons get into the hands of violent or disturbed people so often. And so there should be more done to prevent these types of weapons of getting into the hands of there's just the general masses. Because if you have a deranged person and they can't get a gun, there's not a lot they're going to be able to do, all right? The only other thing is, like setting off bombs, and we've seen that type of violence also. But usually somebody that wants to kill people doesn't want to do it with a bomb. It's more personal to them. They want to be able to, point the gun and see that person fall. They're not going to go with the bomb. It's a different mentality that brings somebody to setting bombs off, So it's,
yeah,
it's,
but we're talking about somebody who goes in and does harm, and first of all, let me go back a little bit. One of the reasons that I feel like there's a connection between bullying and these kind of things is, and I've failed to say this out loud because it's streaming in my head right now. If you have somebody who's been picked on their whole life, bullied, harassed because they're not quite up to par for whatever reasons, but mental health is a much deeper reason than a big nose. Mental health is a much more intricate reason than red hair, all of the things that we've talked about that kids get picked on. So what if you are that kid and you get bullied your whole life and then one day, you just strike out? I believe that's the correlation between the bullying and some of these horrible things that have taken place in the last, in the last 10 years. We've had a lot of mass shootings. We've had a lot of schools attacked. And where does, aside from home, where does the most bullying take place?
In school.
Yeah.
All right. And I agree with you that a lot of times some of the most outrageous violence is perpetrated by somebody who at one time was a victim. Because two things can happen. If somebody is victimized and actually hurt, they can either become stronger and rise above it, or they can become so angry and where they just lose their sense of compassion for everybody. When they do lash out, unfortunately, they get the people that hurt them plus a bunch of innocent victims. It's almost like the bullying stomps their own compassion out of them. And this victim now doesn't feel anything for anybody. And it's a sad state when they're pushed to that point. And it's something that I wish that people that were bullies would understand, that they are that they could be potentially creating somebody who is 10 times meaner than them and would take out innocent bystanders.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's no, in the case of somebody who's suffering with mental illness, a lot of times there is no right and wrong button.
Exactly.
You know, it's just how it affects them personally, because they're struggling in their capacity to make smart choices or educated choices.
The flip side of fear is anger. So people can only handle so much fear. If you push somebody over the edge to the point where they can't cope with the intensity of the fear anymore, once it flips into anger, you've now created a monster, quite bluntly. You've created an individual now that you're not going to be able to control anymore. And this is why a lot of times you'll see people that are so fereful, that don't want to go to school, you know, or sometimes you've even seen it at a workplace, but it's more common in school, but you've also seen it in a workplace where this person who was so timid, so afraid, and then they literally snap and they go from being fearful to the point of being panicked to being so angry that they can't control the rage.
Well, and of course, extreme rage, extreme sadness, anything that is done in extreme, I mean, the kind of, you know what I'm talking about. When I say extreme, I don't just mean that you're angry with somebody and you tell somebody to, scream
well,
at somebody, fight with somebody.
Rage is an intense anger. It's
right.
Rage in itself is like overboard.
Right. So when somebody can't control those things, that's also a sign of the inability to access right and wrong. And
right.
I think one of the biggest things that upsets me, though, is so many times, I think you said something a few minutes ago about the fact that the mom of the young man who killed everybody at the school at Sandy Hook was trying to placate her son. She was trying to keep him in a good place. And I appreciate that. I get that. I understand the need to do that, being a mom first and foremost. I think that I can understand that feeling. But eventually, even if you can't put your head out there for the rest of the people that this person may harm, you need to give some thought to the fact that the first person that they may harm is themselves. So if you're in a situation that you feel is, is going in this direction, I think alerting or addressing that problem is the smartest thing you can do for your son or your daughter. Loving
them.
Because
wasn't he at one point not even communicating her verbally? He would only talk to her via email?
Yeah, for many years.
I mean, that
he only talked to her through the email.
Right, so here you have a kid who won't talk to you, who's so into an altered reality, because that's just not normal, okay? And then you get him weapons and you teach him how to use them. I mean, whatever her thought processes were, they weren't appropriate.
Exactly. Well, and like I said, and then it makes you wonder about the fact that she was a teacher. Was anybody paying any attention to her behavior? I mean, if a lot of people knew that that's what was going on in her house, did anybody,
But how do you know a lot of people knew that? I mean, a lot of times stuff like that happens. people don't talk about it.
Well, because everybody's talking about it now, that they all knew about it.
Hmm.
I mean, there's been several stories that have said, you know, she would take him. A lot of people knew different things that were going on. Whether or not anybody knew the straight story, you're right. Who knows? God knows.
But even if they knew a little element of it. And that's where people become fearful of getting involved. You know, they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to upset her, or I don't want to feel like I'm sticking my nose in where it doesn't belong. This is where that doesn't play into it, because this is a potential volatile situation. And when a situation can potentially involve other people, that's when somebody has to gently step up. No, we don't have the right to judge other people. We don't have a right to wreak havoc on other people's lives. But if you see something that's kind of that blatant, to me, that's pretty blatant. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Something has to be said to somebody.
Well, and that's a part of the problem, and has always been a part of the problem. People thinking that something wasn't any of their business, and indeed, sometimes it is not. But I don't know. When we all talk about these things, there has to be some kind of commitment to each other.
Well, see, I think she needed counseling. I think somebody should have called
absolutely.
Her superior at the school. And said, look, this is the situation going on. She's a wonderful teacher. She's great with the kids. But I think she's missing some major red flags here with her own kid. Maybe you could talk to her and help her to find the appropriate resources. You know, so this way she's not getting in trouble, but somebody stepping in who may be able to help her address it differently. You know, and it doesn't, you know, that's what I'm saying. Don't wreak havoc in people's lives. Don't go to the police or things like that.
Right.
But try to nip it in the bud before it turns into something.
Well, let's address that very quickly. I don't want to go into that too much, because we are going to talk about that later this week. But something you just said is really, really really, really important, and that is, and I talked about this at the meeting that I went to, I grew up believing that our police department were the enforcers.
Mm-hmm.
They were not supposed to be the people who deemed somebody guilty, innocent. They were not the ones that intervened to be social workers. They purely and simply were called to come and make an arrest, you know. Say to somebody, you know, it's time for you to go. We're going to have to sort this out someplace where we can keep you from hurting yourself or somebody else. And that's the end of it. That's the end of their social work. Whereas now, like this, this, I don't know what his title was, but from the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, he talked about the strides that they've made with the different people that they have in their office now that actually do social work. And apparently they're not sheriffs or sheriff deputies or policemen. They are actual social workers. So once you get into the system, according to this man, some of these things are addressed for you. I think that's wonderful.
Wow,
but
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, uh-huh. And I think that when you call the police and let them intervene, that shouldn't be your first, unless there's, you know, you're scared, somebody's holding a gun or somebody's threatening your life or something like that. But to bring in the police because somebody's not doing what you tell them to do, or out of control, as in a teenage child, an older teenage child or something like that, that never made sense to me, because...
Oh.
You just change everything by doing that.
Right.
So I almost wonder if there shouldn't be another more social intervention that discludes the police department. Save the police department, the sheriff's department, for dealing with the person that's holding a gun or that is about to do harm to many others, instead of just calling them domestic disputes, I guess is what I'm looking at. And sometimes the domestic dispute is what's snowballing into the mental welfare of the kids in the house and things like that. I don't know. I just think I did do a little bit of research
with regard to the FBI and how they get involved in certain things. So when I guess you said we're talking about that Thursday?
Thursday, I'm hoping to get Pam Gianfrido here on the show to talk to us about the judicial system, the courts, and the jails, because the whole meeting that they did, I don't know if I read this to you yesterday or not. Join the National Dialogue on Mental Health for Creating Community Solutions. We are seeking your input, stories, and ideas to create an action plan to prevent youth struggling with mental illness from needlessly entering the legal system.
Wow, I love that.
Yes, and that's really what it's about, breaking the connection between mental illness and the legal system. Because the statistics that I gave yesterday in regard to that was like the 30% of women are in need of mental health care that are incarcerated and get incarcerated on a regular basis. So that's why I'm saying the policeman is supposed to be there to protect you. He's the enforcer. He's not the judicial system. He doesn't make a choice whether you're right or wrong. He's just the enforcer. And he doesn't, he's not a social worker, so he can't say, well, you know, Renee, why don't you sit down and talk with your kid? Maybe you can come to a better, he's not trained to do that.
Right.
Although I think that realm for them is opening a little bit because of supply and demand, so to speak. But I think that mental illness and bullying and unkindness to others. I'm going to bring up a story that happened here in Florida. It was about 4 years ago. A young man found his brother hanging from a tree. His brother committed suicide, his only brother. And he was obviously devastated, but nobody ever dealt with that. I mean, I know that we have counselors today in the schools that will help if there's been even a death in the school. Even if a child loses their life in an elementary school or a middle school or a senior high, there are usually crisis counselors that will talk to the kids. If the kids come forward and say, I need to talk to somebody about this, but then we have to debate how many kids will actually do that. But this young man found his brother, his only brother, hanging from a tree and was just left to deal with it himself. Prior to this, I think there were a few struggles from little things that I've read and little things that I've heard through the Deerfield Beach grapevine. But then one day, he gets connected with a young girl, very excited about meeting this young girl. Another young girl steps in and says, you're not good enough for her, leave her alone. You can't use my phone to text anymore. And some words were passed between each other. The outcome of this day was the final text that came from the other young girl, not the girl that he had the crush on, but her friend, who said, you're not good enough for my friend, you know, you should join your brother. Or why don't you go join your brother, or something along those lines. And this young man snapped, put on a pair of work boots, got on his bicycle, rode a long way to get to the school where this other girl was going, and found her, knocked her down, and kicked her repeatedly in the head. She survived, but not really well survived. Her brain was...
permanent damage, right?
Yeah, she has permanent brain damage, and she lost some of her artistic abilities. She was an amazing artist. But this is a perfect story to show people that if something has happened to somebody who's already kind of a loner, somebody who doesn't share, somebody who doesn't talk to anybody, you have to know somebody loved this boy, and these parents already lost one kid, you know, so they must have loved him, but sometimes there's like a fear of knowing something that you can't do anything about, you know, thinking that it's okay.
This is something that I see in kids today that shocks me, is the level of cruelty. And I'm not saying that the young woman deserved what happened to her, but it was a really, really stupid thing to do, to, like you said, to take somebody. The fact that she could not realize that this guy was hurting so much, and number one, it's none of her business who her friend goes out with, so she was really overstepping her bounds to begin with, all right, to say something so cruel to somebody that lost somebody, and I've seen this before, where kids will take, they'll look for the thing that will hurt the person the most and throw it out there. And if it's something that's that traumatic, that's what we're talking about. So now you've just made this person snap, and they're either going to hurt you or hurt another person. And it astonishes me that so many youth, and some adults, by the way, don't have that level of compassion, where it's like they have no filter. They think it, and it comes out their mouth.
Yes, yes. And so now let me ask you something. Do you think that's a sign of mental illness when you don't have that filter?
No, I think that's a sign of poor upbringing, to be honest with you. Because I was brought up in a very, very – everybody that I know that has strong compassion got it from somewhere. They got it from their roots. They had some mentor that taught them. And, you know, my mother was an extremely compassionate woman, taught my sister and I to always, you know, in other words, be careful how we treated other people, but not be so sensitive about how people treated us. And it's always worked well for us. But so many people, it's a lot of times when you see the parents of these type of kids, they're very nitpicky. They're always putting people down. It's almost, and that's not a blanket statement, but very, very often they're not taught compassion from the parents. The parents are very opinionated, very judgmental, and when it goes from a 30 or 40-year-old person down to a 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old person that doesn't have life experience, they're taking that level of criticism and judgment on people, and they're losing their compassion. I think compassion has to be taught and reinforced.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that, although I do think some of us are born with the ability to have compassion at a very, very young age, because I see it.
All right, then I read that wrong. It's not that compassion has to be taught. Compassion has to be reinforced. You can actually compassion out of somebody by not reinforcing it as they get older and making sure that they have good values about how they treat other people. And I find a lot of these kids today, when you meet the and I'm talking from experience, a lot of times when I see a kid who's very uncompassionate and unkind, and then I meet their parents, they're like mirror images of the parents. The parents are very judgmental, very like it's all about me and everybody else around me are idiots. And it's like, oh, my God, no wonder the kid's like this. And that's happened quite a number of times for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't disagree with that. I see that as well. But I also see the fact that, first of all, let me say that, yes, you're right. If you have a young child who gets the difference between caring about somebody or having empathy for somebody instead of honing in on the other person's challenge or their difference or something and picking on them, that should be appreciated by the parents in that young person's life. That should be applauded, and it reinforces it, and they grow up knowing that that's the right thing to do. I also think that most of us are born with that, but you're right. It has to be reinforced, and it has to be appreciated by the bosses in your life, which are mom and dad at that age. But I also think that in this world of somebody asked me the other day, doesn't it seem like there's a whole bunch more people that are being born with these kind of problems? And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, is that really true? Because of all the stuff that you and I talked about.
Where kids are being taught today that nobody is allowed being mean to them. And that's just not true. People can think whatever they want of you. Where did this attitude come from that people believe that people don't have the right to be mean to you? People can have whatever attitude towards me they want to. It's not my business what other people think of me. It's only my business how I live my life. And people have the right to think whatever they want. But kids today are being taught by this current generation that people don't have the right to think poorly of you. And that's insanity.
Well, Izzy talks about that in his book, and in the workbook that we work on every week, he talks about the fact that that's not, there's no validity to the fact that somebody else can judge you to that degree, and that teaching your kids that everybody's supposed to be nice to you, and if they're not nice to you, then, you know, stay away from them and things like that. So leads a child to believe that it's their right to have people be nice to them instead of something that they earn. So
right.
He's taught us a lot about that and, of course, opened that door for us to think about, which I think is important. But I still feel like there's a big connection between not paying attention to your own family, your own circle of friends, your own workplace, and recognizing when somebody has issues that are much greater than having a bad day. And
right.
That's the things that I think everybody needs to start paying attention on. Doesn't mean I want everybody to jump on a bandwagon and try to diagnose everybody or evaluate everybody. Shelley just said, if it's not about you, it really isn't any of your business, and I am a firm believer in that. However, there has to be some empathy involved when you see somebody is really struggling and doesn't seem to be able to make appropriate decisions, and you're worried about that person, and that person is somebody that you care about, or maybe that person is related to people that you care about. Any of those scenarios, somebody needs to say something. And
right.
When I do these meetings in the weeks to come, every time we talk about this on the show, I'm making notes so that I'm going to remember some of the questions that I feel are imperative for us to get answers to be able to help everybody make the proper decisions, to be able to help everybody know when to step in, when not to step in, when to yell wolf, when not to yell wolf. There should be some guidelines. And in order to make any changes with this, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all
right.
of us, Karen, to want to do something about it. But we need guidelines on how to do it, right? I mean, because we don't just automatically assume, we should go over and just talk to this person. That may not be the right idea. I'm not
right.
sure what the right idea is.
All right. And like I said before, it's not just doing something. It's doing something that's appropriate, because sometimes you can make a situation worse if you just barge in and get in the middle of something that you don't fully understand. There is a way of getting involved in a way that would if nothing is really going on, you haven't harmed the person, but if something's going on, you've alerted the appropriate people that can help in some way. So, and that's what we have to bring out is constructive advice on what to do in certain types of situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe, like I said, when I'm at these meetings and things like that, I can ask some of these questions, because maybe these things are in place. You know, a lot of our organizations and everything, they put things in place, but there's no mass media to spread the word in regard to some of the things that they you know, that they qualify as being the proper way to handle something
right.
like this. So maybe that's a part of the answer, too, you know,
some of what I saw on the FBI site, I was surprised by what's there, and I was also surprised by what's not there. So when we get into that arena, I can kind of go a little bit more specifically by what I'm talking. You know, but there are things that the FBI gets involved with that I didn't think they would get involved with, and there are things that I thought they should get involved with that's not up there as one of the things you can call them for. So I was kind of surprised in both directions.
Mm-hmm. Is there still like set guidelines on what the FBI is actually what the FBI actually oversees, like,
yes.
You know, like kidnapping, like all the things that we grow up learning, you know, the FBI gets involved if this has happened and if that happened. Are there clear guidelines with that?
Right. And that's what I'm saying. And I was perusing it, and I went through, and there's a list there, and you can click on it, and then it opens up articles, and it goes into more detail of how they get involved and what some of the statutes are. So I started doing some research there. And like I said, I'll do some more research between today and tomorrow, so when it comes up in conversation, I'll either this week or next week, then I'll be able to go into a little bit more detail. But like I was said, I was surprised by some of what's there and some of what's not there.
Mhm. Well, and you know, like everything like that, it is surprising how some of those kind of decisions are made as to what pertains to what department and things like that. That's like, when I found out that the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, can override a judicial decision when it pertains to driver's licenses. Did you know that?
No. What does that mean?
Not in all cases, but if the judge says, you have to do this, this, and this before you can get your driver's license back, and you go to the DMV, and the DMV says you've honored everything that pertains to them, you can get your driver's license.
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you know, it's more of the, you know, oh, we changed this and we forgot to tell everybody kind of a deal, I'm sure. But or the fact that some of the things that we see, well, you and I are big advocates of like Criminal Minds and Law and Orders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We get a lot of information. The problem is, of course, when we get it on TV, we have to make sure that it's true before we really go into it, because it could be just, you know, their ability to put on a show. But a lot of cases that you think would be so cut and dried because of underlying facts. And if somebody's willing to dig, you can almost always find something. And we've talked about this many times, that pertains to what you got going on and changes it. Even though maybe for the last 5-10 years they've been doing it this way, they dig up something that was long enough ago that set precedence, and now they can change it.
Right.
I think that there's a lot of that going on in a courtroom. Well, we're out of time, though. I want to thank everybody for there's been a lot of correspondence with me on Facebook and on the phone. A lot of people have called me when they read some of this, because mental illness has touched all of us at one time or another. And a big thing, too, is suicide due to mental illness has touched a lot of people that just, you know, dealt with it the best they could, and in many cases feel guilty because they weren't paying attention. So it's our hope that talking about this and not just sweeping it under the throw rug in the kitchen, that, you know, we'll open some doors for people so that they can get the kind of help that they need and that they deserve. So suffering in silence is ridiculous. We don't need to do that anymore about anything. So I want to wish everybody a great day. It looks like it's going to be beautiful here in South Florida. My wishes go out to Eddie Brill, who had a surgery this week. He's doing fine. A lot of people know and love Eddie. He's a comedian. He opens for the David Letterman show. And just to say, all of you up there suffering, snow and that cold. Come on down. Have a great day, everybody. God bless. Thanks, Shell. Talk to you after a while.
Okay, Reen. Everyone have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.